Walk With Me by Diana Woods.
At the edges of the earth was Lintucoto, the home of the water birds who brought souls to newly born humans and snatched them away at the moment of death. In ancient Finnish mythology, those yellow and black-billed whoopers transported the deceased to an underground city, a dark and crowded place ruled by Tuoni, the spirit of death, where life went on the same as above ground.
At the age of 13 and alone, Hulda, my Finnish grandmother, arrived at Ellis Island. As the oldest of a dozen starving children, she'd been exiled to work as a maid for an American family. For over 50 years, with two marriages, the birth of my father, and four grandchildren, she shipped bundles of clothing and food back to her homeland. I'd sit at her round kitchen table, pressing my thumb onto twine as she tightened the knot on brown paper boxes stacked on a crocheted tablecloth. Her small apartment smelled of coffee and sugar-covered donuts. Behind the panes of a small china cabinet, amber glass plates glittered. When she leaned forward to trim away the excess twine, her large breast wobbled like lumps of gelatin under her thin cotton dress. But that was long ago, and she's no longer with us. If she's waiting for me to join her in Tuonela, the land of the dead, she'll be disappointed. When the birds circle overhead during my final hour, I'll be in my bedroom in the same IKEA bed with the purple and beige blankets, wrapped in my favorite pink velour robe and propped up by pillows. Only wisps of hair cover my balding head. Other than a slash of pink lipstick, my face is pale. My body has shriveled like a rotten potato, but my belly remains swollen with ovarian cancer cells. The sun glares through the open window, and the yellow window curtains flutter like wings. My bedroom door to the backyard patio is open, and I hear the song of the sparrows and finches as they circle the hanging feeder. The squirrels utter ferocious chirping noises and scramble for the birdseed that falls to the ground. The dogs yelp and chase after them. My daughter Ronnie sits on the right side of my bed in front of the open door, and my son Brian on the left near the window. When I start to drift off, Bonnie pinches my fingers to bring me back. She'd been only 3 months old when I adopted her from Calcutta, India. Now she's 26, but not ready to let me go. Other than her years in college, we've always lived together and shared our thoughts and plans. She's looking for a job to advance her career goals. I'm lucky she's had time off to take care of me so I can die at home. She spreads a hand over my chest to make sure I'm breathing. Ronnie's partner, Sonia, recently moved into our home and has become my second Indian daughter. Her scarves, belts, purses, and hats are sorted and hung on pegs across one wall of their bedroom. She's tall and athletic and has an tattoo on her right shoulder. Working with stroke patients in a local hospital, she understands the anger and grief of those left behind. She sits at my bedside with her arm over Ronnie's shoulder. Brian taps furiously on his iPad. A 48-year-old engineer, a problem solver, he has difficulty being idle and knows there's nothing more that could be done for me. At age 71, my time has come. He'll miss me, but has a wife and child to worry about. When he and Ronnie huddle together, I'll hear them asking,
"How much longer?"
Watching me die will be difficult for my children, but for me, life has lost all meaning. Other than clinic appointments, I rarely leave the house. Ronnie drives my car each week to keep the battery charged. Looking around my room at the few possessions I haven't yet given away, things I'd hope to use, including crochet hooks and unread books, my heart aches. My garden full of tomato plants and the staggering ferns on the patio trellis are a reminder that life will go on without me. Pierre, my fluffy white pooch, has been with me for 10 years and naps on the end of my bed. Somehow, he knows that I'll leave him behind on my journey. Zoe, the young pug, sleeps with Ronnie and Sonia. I won't be able to take care of her. I picture the dogs arching their necks and howling at the moment of my death. My 14-year-old grandson, who refuses to allow his frizzy mass of hair to be trimmed, wanders in and out of the room, clutching onto his Nintendo DS. If I blow a kiss, he'll tell me that he loves me. I'll miss his graduations and birthday celebrations and never know what kind of man he'll be. My robust daughter-in-law likes to tell stories about her life and won't expect me to respond. Friends wearing shorts and sandals drop by for a final visit, some rushing off quickly, not knowing what to say or fearful that I might die in their presence. All their cheerful words about getting better or waiting for a miracle have ended. Others chew their fingernails and chatter about the good times we've had together, kayaking in Catalina or bison at the marina, things I haven't been able to do in years and barely remember. The recent events in their lives don't interest me now that I can't share them. A hospice nurse arrives to check on my pain medication. My family will ask, but she won't be able to predict the hour of my death. The wait could be long, but my family won't leave the room and risk missing the moment of my passing. My room becomes a busy place, a social place. Ronnie and Sonia order delivery of tandoori chicken, fried rice, eggplant buried in garlic and onions, and soft but crispy naan. There'll be spicy food and chai for everyone but me.